This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
National political conventions continue. Are they conventions or are they infomercials now? From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishour, in for David Brancaccio, who's on assignment. The Republican National Convention starts today, and if you watched any of the Democratic Convention, you know this year's mix of live and pre-recorded speeches was very different from the traditional format. You can expect something similar from the Republicans, of course. At heart, these conventions are a form of marketing, and moving them to virtual events in a COVID economy has its marketing pros and cons. Marketplace's Justin Ho has more.
Without a live audience, political parties miss out on a way to broadcast enthusiasm for a message.
You don't get the applause at certain points. You don't get the orchestrated signs that people were holding up.
Kostas Panagopoulos at Northeastern University is the editor of Rewiring Politics, a book about modern party conventions. He says virtual conventions do give political parties a chance to convey their messages exactly as they intend to.
They can be recorded and improved, and if the points are not clear enough, they can even be rewritten and re-recorded.
Panagopoulos says in recent years, traditional conventions have been getting more expensive. Will Reinhardt is a senior research fellow at Utah State University. He says the virtual format means parties don't have to reserve a huge venue, get everyone in the same room, and make sure everyone has food.
It's really, really easy to get your message out quite quickly with a pretty low production process.
What's still unclear, he says, is whether virtual messaging can push people to vote. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
A survey of some of the country's major employers suggests many companies are rethinking their plans to return employees to work in the fall. Pacific Business Group on Health surveyed companies that collectively provide benefits to 4 million people. 57% said soaring infection numbers were leading them to put return to work plans on hold. 43% said they would still plan for bringing employees back to work, but with added safety measures. 82% said they were creating flexible schedules for parents with young children, and 18% said they were providing additional childcare options. All right, let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 1.9%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 8-9% range, with the Dow future up 255 points, and the 10-year Treasury yield is at 0.645%. Rio Tinto is the world's biggest iron ore miner, and it is cutting the performance bonus of its CEO after the company destroyed two ancient Aboriginal sites in Australia. The sites are tens of thousands of years old and set right on top of a body of ore the company planned to mine. Their destruction prompted outrage in Australia. The BBC's Frey Lindsay has more on that.
Bonus payments to CEO Jean-Sébastien Jacques and two other senior Rio Tinto executives will be reduced by nearly $4 million after global condemnation over the destruction of the sacred Aboriginal sites in Pilbara, Western Australia. The rock shelters, dating back more than 46,000 years, were destroyed in May to make way for an iron ore mine, despite objections from the local Aboriginal community. After the caves were destroyed, a representative of the traditional owners of the land said losing the site was a devastating blow. Rio Tinto, whose shares are listed in both London and Sydney, said it would provide more details on the bonus cuts in its 2020 remuneration report. I'm the BBC's Frey Lindsay for Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
In a big tech David and Goliath battle, Microsoft just sided with David. The maker of popular video game Fortnite is suing Apple and Google, and Microsoft is joining on behalf of a video game maker. In a court filing over the weekend, Microsoft said its own video game business would be harmed by actions Apple's taking. Marketplace's Nova Sappho is here with more. Hi, Nova.
Good morning.
All right, so the maker of Fortnite is suing a video game maker, is suing Google and Apple over alleged monopolistic practices in their app stores. What does that have to do with Microsoft?
Well, what it has to do is with what Apple did in response to Epic's provocation. A couple of weeks ago, Epic Games unilaterally changed its policy to allow Fortnite users to make in-app purchases, circumventing Apple's payment system, in which Apple takes a cut, anywhere from 15 to 30% of sales. Well, Epic was ready for what came next. Apple took the game out of its app store for violating its rules. Apps are not allowed to have direct purchases that avoid Apple's payment platform. Apple says this is to protect users. Now, Google did the same thing. It removed the Fortnite game, and Epic took both companies to court, saying their rules are monopolistic. Meanwhile, Apple also said it will stop allowing another thing that Epic makes, called the Unreal Engine, from working with Mac and iOS devices. This is really important to lots of different companies because the Unreal Engine is a widely used tool to make video games. And that's where Microsoft comes in. It's objecting to Apple blocking the Unreal Engine, saying it will hurt Microsoft's business because it will be forced to either abandon Apple customers or find another tool to develop games. So this in effect basically is lending support to some of Epic's claims.
What does Apple have to say about all this?
Well, what it's saying is what it's saying all along, that Epic needs to play by the same rules as other app makers. Apple says Epic had been playing by those rules for more than a decade, then suddenly made this change a couple of weeks ago. In its court filing, Apple said what's happening to Epic is a, quote, self-inflicted wound. And this goes to the heart of Apple's and Google's ecosystem strategy, Sabri. Get people to not just buy their devices, but buy stuff on their devices, stay on the platform's ecosystem from many of their tasks. This is important because Google and Apple make tens of billions of dollars a year from their app stores, but Microsoft has a lot at stake too. The company does not break out gaming revenues separately, but it's part of its personal computing business, which brought in $48 billion last year.
All right, Marketplace's Nova Sappho, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'm Sabri Benishour, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.